read it eventually. It may be hard to choose a new race, given his condition and the state of his financial affairs. Nevertheless, the invisible girl claimed it could be done with in-game methods. Also, Rock was hardly any worse than the rest of the uglies, and probably less ugly than many. Orcs, for example, looked a hell of a lot worse with their prominent crooked fangs and greenish skin. Even dwarves were more pleasing to the eye. I choose the Rock. Rostendrix Potarentax, you have chosen the Rock race. Do you confirm your race choice? Ah, so the sweet voice was back. I do. Congratulations. You are the last representative of the Rock race in Second World. The Rock race is no longer an available choice to the players. How interesting. Was this an unexpected bonus, or did he fall for some scam aimed at total losers that no one ever told him about because they believed him to be different? He hadn't a clue. You have 30 primary and 10 secondary stats to choose from. There was no time to sweat the details. His clock could stop any moment. He had already spent much longer on race selection than anticipated. I'll take care of this later once I'm in the game. Is that possible? Unfortunately, your account's conditions do not permit it. You must distribute the stat points now, or your vessel will be rejected by Second World's Aura. A pity, of course, but there was no getting around it. Ross thought everything was clear enough with the primary stats. He'd have to dump as many points as possible into agility to get a bonus to strength, which would result in a substantial overall increase in the sum total of all his stats. Vigor was something he didn't quite understand. According to the description, a character with low vigor got tired quickly, even doing the easiest work. And Ross would have to toil quite a lot. He ended up dumping 6 points into vigor, grudgingly, ending up with the following list. Primary base stats. Strength, 9. Agility, 27. Intellect, 1. Mental power, 1. Stamina, 2. Vigor, 8. Resilience, 0. Accuracy, 0. Defense, 1. Attack, 1. Having distributed his stat points, he wondered whether he really needed agility for anything. It might be perfectly useless, which meant he'd made a colossal blunder. It was hard to make decisions lacking even approximate information, let alone exhaustive. There was too little time available before immersion, and most of it was spent taking care of legal, medical, and financial affairs. The conversation with the gamer attorney had been brief and chaotic, something Ross was coming to really regret. Time. Everything was a question of time. He should distribute the points one way or other. He would fine-tune it later, inside the game. He took care of the secondary stats quickly and without thinking twice. After all, they were secondary, and one shouldn't worry about them too much. A worker would obviously need carrying capacity. He remembered that a miner, his best career option, according to the attorney, should be able to carry large amounts of ore. Strength also affected this somehow, but he wasn't sure about the exact way the stats affected each other. Speed would also come in handy, whatever the nature of his work. A slowpoke wouldn't be fast enough to be successful at anything. The essence of things told him nothing. However, the craftsman's skill seemed useful, as he might have to manufacture things. Arcane knowledge? Well, he who increases knowledge increases sorrow, and free points were hard to come by. Reason and creation sounded useful. As for disguise and perception, being perceptive seemed preferable to the ability to hide. Being lucky should also probably come in handy. He ended up with the following values. Secondary base stats. Perception, 2. Disguise, 1. Arcane knowledge, 1. Speed, 4. Luck, 2. Carrying capacity, 4. Essence of things, 1. Craftsman, 1. Reason, 2. Creation, 2. Congratulations, you have distributed your free stat points. The door to a new realm will open before you in a moment, a realm of heroes and amazing opportunities. We wish you the best of luck as you explore its vast expanses. And so it came to pass that a newborn character came to Second World. His stat points were probably distributed in an incredibly idiotic way, but you wouldn't know it from the upbeat music that had been playing all along. In a data center somewhere. Here we go again. What's the matter? The same error. Come again? The working account registration utility has gone mad. The number of available races keeps fluctuating between 1 and 20-something. Oh. That must be a result of cutting down on the available options. Work accounts got the axe once again. They haven't been cut down in 2 weeks, and this bug keeps recurring. The users see the full list of races, so it doesn't seem to affect them. That's not the issue. We have a recurring system error. Ignore it. The system has been checked a few times, so the problem must originate elsewhere. Where exactly? Have you come from a farm or something? It could be an oxidized contact, or maybe someone failed to insert a cable all the way in. It could be anything. If there's a system failure, they'll roll out the backup and check everything manually. I only hope the failure doesn't occur on our shift. Some unknown location. We got one. Still unclear. A selection has been made. Is it final? Take a look. I have heard of the following term, ridiculous. I believe it to be applicable to the candidate. I disagree. I believe the term amusing is a great deal more pertinent. He's good for nothing. A waste of time. The worst option. He has no prospects if he's capable of this blunder. There's nothing that prevents him from becoming the first, and his stupidity is far from indubitable. There's nothing to argue about. He doesn't even realize he just got an opportunity for ascension unavailable to others. And how can he become the first in anything? His body's in a cage. Every cage has a door. Otherwise, there's no point in having a cage. You believe there's a chance of discovering what you are referring to as a door? Well, we have. We are hardly the worst candidates. I'm not so sure about you. What is your basis for making this corollary? None. I have merely tried to apply what the creators refer to as sense of humor. Chapter 3. His eyes were assaulted by a barrage of colors, while his ears registered a cacophony of sounds that were present in just as great an abundance. Ross couldn't help falling on his bottom, staring before himself in confusion, trying to focus his sight without much success. He saw the following block of text in pale letters, which promptly disappeared. Welcome to Second World. You are at the starting location in the city of Arben. This is the newbie respawn point. We wish you a pleasant game. He finally managed to focus his eyes, feeling all the more amazed. What he saw before himself didn't remotely resemble a computer game. Back in the days of yore, he would admire the cloud textures, the surface objects, and the shapes of the planes of his foes and allies, soaring high into the skies in his speedy fighter plane as shown on his widescreen monitor. But there was no monitor this time. Instead of seeing something similar to the environment he had found himself in during character creation, Ross found himself in a regular world. He was sitting next to the crossroads of two narrow streets of a medieval city, or rather, one designed to look like one. Gray cobblestones, arranged in a slapdash manner, paved the street underneath him. One of them protruded strongly, he could feel it in his coccyx, and the sensation was far from pleasant. The two-story buildings could have belonged in a medieval European town, although they were cleaner and neater, like the old section of a city with a rich history. stone walls, storm shutters on the windows, and curtains of dazzling white. A huge ginger tomcat sat on an uneven ledge with an expression that must have absorbed all the sloth of the universe. The couple of rock pigeons, sitting at some distance from it on the same ledge, paid the rascal no attention whatsoever, while the rascal himself kept glancing at the pigeons, clearly without any intention of chasing them, but simply to maintain his reputation as a ruthless predator. The sky was present, too, just as blue as it had ever been. There was a single cloud floating above him, as white as they got. The birds were chirruping. Someone was babbling something hurriedly somewhere nearby, and some bells were tolling languorously in the distance. He felt a cool breeze caress his skin, and the sun was beginning to warm the back of his head. A smell of fresh pastries tickled his nostrils. "I must have gone nuts," said Ross, scaring himself by the sound of his own voice. It sounded reedy and utterly alien, with a tendency to stretch vowels and sibilants. A well-familiar short figure ran out from behind a corner, a dwarf, just like the one he saw first when selecting a race. He had seemed awkward to him then, but now the impression was completely different. He ran with the speed of a well-kicked football, crouching in a funny manner with every step, which made it seem like he was moving in a series of jumps. The sitting Ross found himself in the way of the speeding shorty, who barely managed to make a detour, then barked gruffly in a low voice, already behind his back, "Watch where you're sitting, noob!" Ross turned around, surprised, and just in time, too, another dwarf emerged from thin air right in front of him, patting himself on his short jacket, then thrusting his hand into a bag hanging over his shoulder to feel something inside. After that, he asked him in just as low a voice, "Where's the bureau?"
What bureau?
"Ah, I get it."
"You get what?"
"That you're a total noob."
The dwarf turned around and headed in the same direction as his kinsman. At that very moment, a third dwarf, emerging from behind the corner just like the first two, failed to change direction in due time and crashed into Ross at full speed. Both rolled across the cobblestones. The short character was the first to jump up. He dashed off, shouting,
"Why don't you flush yourself down the drain already, noob?"
Ross finally realized that he might have picked the wrong place to sit and meditate on his existence, and shifted toward the roadside. Another dwarf ran through the spot where he was sitting a moment ago, followed by the looming frame of an ogre. Or rather, a river ogre, inasmuch as Ross could remember the description. It also said that other representatives of the race were perfectly savage and best not encountered on a narrow path, for they almost always tended to attack first. The ogre didn't run, he walked, but he walked at a fast pace, with his head sunk into his shoulders and his body hunched forward.
"Hey, mister, could you please tell me where..."
"Follow me to the bureau."
Ross had no idea what sort of a bureau it was, and whether he needed it in the first place, but he decided to follow the ogre and scampered along as fast as he could. After all, he was the first player who didn't call him a noob. That seemed promising. This was the first time Ross was playing a game of this sort, but from his experience with the flight simulators, remembered that noobs were usually players who flooded chat rooms with inane blabber, asking for tips on basic gameplay in the middle of a dogfight, and doing other outrageous things, such as asking which key to press to shoot, just as your team was on the brink of losing. Their kind could even shoot you in the tail before you took off, utterly failing to understand the difference between allies and enemies, and not due to lack of experience either, but rather as a result of grave problems with their intellect and maturity. Ross didn't want to be considered a noob.
"Excuse me, ogre, why is everything around us so..."
"So what?"
"Well, real."
You're a noob, aren't you?
I'm not. I mean, I am, probably.
Read some guides.
Guides?
Where do you get the money for your account? From your mom? Well, now go and ask her for some guides.
I know what guides are. I used to play a flight simulator, you know. I've read some there.
Durr, a flight simulator, eh? So you're a pilot, are you?
I haven't played in a while. The guides are available at the Game Forum, aren't they?
Sorta. Guild forums have them, too, but they wouldn't touch a noob like you with a barge pole. Their guides are more interesting, though.
The ogre sighed. Is everything always this real here?
You mean you're a deep diver?
Say what?
Full immersion.
Well, yeah.
Your mom is sure gonna give you a real licking.
Why?
Because you've just cost her a hell of a lot of money. Beat it, underage hacker, before she takes a stick to you. Oh, and on a work account, too. You're a barrel of laughs, aren't you? Make sure you don't try to get into any lady's panties. You'll get busted at once. A minor in a game using another person's account, they'll fine you into oblivion. And I bet your mom will tan your hide so hard you won't be able to sit for a week. How did you manage to log on, anyway?
It's a long story, but...
We're here. Now scram. I'm busy.
Ross didn't even notice how they reached a rather narrow semicircular square through the tangle of twisted streets. Its far side ended at a facade of a long, three-story building decorated by a tacky colonnade, with a wide, many-stepped staircase descending to the cobblestones. There were at least 100 dwarves and orcs huddled before it, all looking identical, with the odd, occasional brownish-gray ogre sticking out. A stocky, Scandinavian-looking fellow, looking just like a regular human being, stood on top of it, clad in a black cape and wearing a squarish hat of the same color. He had his nose stuck in an open, leather-bound folder and was making loud pronouncements that seemed to make no sense at all.
2 mules to Tagen's tree daily, 140 equipment and potions, and a buff at lunchtime. 4 miners, same place, copper, production-based pay, 170 per 100, equipment and potions, and a buff at lunchtime. 1 mule to Juratus's granite quarry, weekly contract, expendable upon request, 155 per day, equipment and potions, a buff in the morning, and 1 more at lunchtime, 2 meals.
"Me!"
shouted the ogre of his acquaintance. Well, of sorts. The man in black raised his left hand with his palm facing upwards, without so much as looking at the big guy. His fingers produced a dim yellow, firefly-like spark that rushed toward the crowd, hovered over the ogre's head for a moment, then quickly dissolved. The ogre turned around and disappeared behind the corner, looking determined. Ross realized this whole affair bore some relation to employment. Another thing that he realized was just how real this world was if the characters needed food. After all, there must be a reason why they mentioned meals as part of hiring terms. He didn't understand just how one got employed here, but he suspected it would be easy enough to understand. None of the players he had seen so far looked like geniuses. So, he'd find his way about it. But he also shouldn't rush it. After all, John said they'd be able to find a contract for him that would enable him to save up for his account-related and medical expenses. How ironic. He was supposed to play a game in order to earn the money to support the remains of his actual body in a viable condition, as well as the money required to play the game itself. Incidentally, the thought of food made Ross realize he wouldn't mind having a bite of something. It wasn't quite hunger yet, but a state that directly preceded it, inasmuch as he could recall his senses. He realized he looked silly as he approached the crowd of players and touched the nearest ogre on the shoulder, acting under the subconscious impression that if one of them engaged in conversation, others would as well.
"Excuse me, but I'd really like to know how to grab a bite of something around here, as in a meal, you know?"
"You're some noob. I agree with that. Still, though, the same way you do IRL, that is, in real life, you stuff it in your mouth, chew it, and swallow it. That's how it goes.
I see. But how does one find food here?
Ha ha ha. I'm filming you. I'll upload the video to the forum later, let the others have a laugh, too.
I'm still wondering about how one might find food here.
Even for a noob, you're just too... Are you messing with me?
I'm not. Are you sure you're not a troll?
Nope, a different race, a rare one.
I'll disappoint you about that, a nearby dwarf butted in. Noobs are by no means a rarity here. On the contrary, as a matter of fact.
Look, I have already agreed I'm a noob. Please answer my question about food, and I won't pester you any more.
What about food?
The dwarf looked confused.
You'll fall down laughing in a moment, the ogre chuckled.
Where can I find some food? A meal?
You're not just a noob. You're a noob squared, an outstanding specimen of rare noobness, rarer than a living dinosaur.
I agree with your assessment entirely. Still,
in any tavern, dive, brothel, or bistro, you get the idea. It costs money, though. Being a noob, you're very unlikely to have any. You can leave the city and rummage through the countryside. There's lots of free game there, as well as fruits and berries of different sorts. But since you have this squiggle over your head, you're more likely to be prey than predator. Anyway, take a peek in your bag first, and stop bugging people already. This is no noob school. This is serious business.
Ross walked away from the crowd, and finally took a good look at himself. Before, he had been a little surprised by the sound of his voice, which was nothing like his own, as well as the shuffling gait. His good old body felt different. He also seemed to have become taller. The ground looked further away now. What a pity he had no mirror about him. His arms were spindly and really long, reaching further down than the middle of his thighs. His fingers were even thinner, like a spider's legs, with joints that looked knobby in an unhealthy way. The bluish nails were thick and might have qualified as claws. The skin was grayish, as if transplanted from an old corpse. His legs were hard to see, obscured by the rough brown fabric of his pants, but they looked just as long as his arms and with knobby knees. He was the spitting image of the figure he had seen at the race selection screen. He touched his head, a long neck, two eyes looking rather large, ears also far from tiny, and a tangled mass of short hair. The skull was elongated, like a melon. Not the prettiest sight, really. Ross took a look at the other players. None of them looked likely to get any modeling contracts either. Oh, and why was everyone here male? On the other hand, that was clear enough. They were hiring players with mining skills, and few women were interested in that. Also, he didn't know many ladies who would be comfortable with such ugly characters. He wasn't particularly pleased either. This wouldn't have mattered much in one of the old games, where all the fighter planes looked the same. However, here he would have liked to have a slightly more pleasing appearance. Not dazzlingly handsome, perhaps, but better than this. He should alter his appearance as soon as he managed to come into some money. Perhaps it wouldn't even take that much in terms of funds. He'd have to look into the matter at a later time. So, what else did he have apart from the body? A bag on his shoulder, small and thin. What was inside? Ross put his hand in the bag and froze. An image formed before his eyes, a large brown square divided into smaller squares. There was the following legend at the top. Novice's bag, 25 slots, weight reduced by 1.0. Weight, 0.45 kilograms. Durability, 20 out of 20. So that was how it worked. Ross grabbed the fabric of his sleeve. Novice's jacket, protection from chilly summer evenings, very weak protection against cold or inclement weather. Melee defense, 1. Ranged defense, 0. Magic defense, 0. Weight, 0.72 kilograms. Durability, 28 out of 28. Ross decided against grabbing the fabric of his pants. He just squinted and peered at them attentively. The following information popped up. Novices' woolen pants. Protection from chilly summer evenings. Very weak protection against cold or inclement weather. Melee defense, 1. Ranged defense, 0. Magic defense, 0. Weight, 0.61 kilograms. Durability, 30 out of 30. Ross felt like he made a great discovery. He started peering at everything. Buildings, players, birds, and clouds. Detailed information didn't pop up every time, but it happened often enough. For example, he could now see the names over the head of every player. All of them looked just like his own awkward mouthful of a name. They appeared to use a single algorithm for generating them in order to make life harder for the poor users. There was a single exception, a black guy who kept making proclamations of some sort from the top of a staircase. There was nothing but the legend Grandis above his name. Nor did he have the worm-like squiggle to the left of his name like the regular workers. The mystery was too much for Ross, and so he returned to the crowd and asked the same ogre. "Does Grandis have a VIP account? I see that he has but one word in his name, and a more or less normal one, too." Everyone who could hear him laughed out loud. The rest turned their heads toward the sudden outburst of mirth, and even Grandis interrupted his speech and gave the mob an uncomprehending stare. "Where are you from, noob?" asked one of the dwarves once he finished laughing. The ogre from before decided to reveal the secret, apparently as a token of gratitude for a good laugh.
"Grandis is an NPC, you noob nincompoop. Run along to your mom now, or someone might hurry you along with a kick."
The last thing Ross wanted was a kick from a creature whose mass was at least twice that of the Rock, so he prudently left the crowd, having understood nothing from the ogre's explanation. What the hell was an NPC? And where was a poor noob supposed to get food? Just a moment. The bag. He had been told it might contain something of use. So, the bag. Having counted the smaller squares, Ross confirmed that there were 30 of them altogether, just like the description said. So they must be the slots in question. Their purpose also soon became clear when he saw pictures of 3 items locked into the first slots in the top row. There was something running over them, a thin and sharp arrow that looked like a mouse cursor. Ross stopped it at the very first item, and the brief info popped up at once. Novice's Vigor Potion. Description. Adds 25 points to vigor over 20 seconds. Special properties. Cannot be given to another player, sold to an NPC, or discarded. Did he need it right now? Would he feel invigorated? Possibly, but more likely not. He shouldn't hurry. Best to keep it for later. They must have given him the item for a reason, after all. The potion was followed by 2 identical objects with identical names and descriptions. Novice's Small Ration. Description. Contains everything you need to avoid feeling hunger for 24 game hours. Attention. This is no replacement for real food. Remember the needs of your second body left in the first world. Special properties. Cannot be given to another player, sold to an NPC, or discarded. He decided he could wait. He wasn't all that hungry yet. Suddenly, he felt a twinge of anxiety, having found himself in an unfamiliar place with no money. Incidentally, where would this money be? The kind that could be exchanged into perfectly real currency? There wasn't a single coin in his bag. And what was this thing on his belt? Novice's Purse. Basic capacity, 350 copper coins. Theft protection, 1.1. Weight, 0.09 kilograms. Durability, 10 out of 10. Ross twisted the purse this way and that, but didn't manage to discover a single coin there. This was rather unfortunate. They didn't even give him a token sum of money. Oh well, finances weren't the immediately pressing issue. His attorney's help was, however. How long would it take him to hang around here waiting for their representative, and how were they supposed to find him? There should obviously be some means of communication. The flight simulation games had them, after all. However, he had no idea how to use them. Wasn't Morrison's representative supposed to contact him at once? He decided to pass the time over a closer study of the interface, the semi-transparent glyphs at the periphery of vision. If the field of vision was the equivalent of the monitor, this looked a lot like the interface in the old games he'd played. Anyone closely familiar with computers should recognize them, even someone without any specific gaming experience. There were four apparent stat bars. An attentive study revealed their descriptions. The red bar represented hit points, and he had 28 of those currently. The blue bar represented his magical energy, 21 points altogether. The green bar was vigor, 82 points. Everything was clear enough except for the last bar, yellow and narrow, fury. The maximum was a measly 10 points, and the entire bar was empty. Only its outline was shown. He could only assume that he had no fury points presently, and that they didn't accumulate for some reason. Ross knew nothing about the bar's purpose, or whether he needed it at all, and decided to file that question, along with about 1,000 others, for a later time. There was the chat window with a sophisticated settings menu. The visibility was poor, with everything looking faded. But wait, the instant he thought of it, the semi-transparent frames became a lot thicker and more opaque, improving visibility drastically. Zone chat. Anything there? Nothing at all. Either no one used it, or he was too far away from such users. Requested logs. How about this one? Empty as well. System messages. You are in the city of Arben, in the Ralia province, a provisionally safe zone. Nothing else. Wait a moment. What about this flashing window? Duthitnail Pritengwar. Was someone trying to send him a private message? Could one of the players in the square have decided to inform Ross in writing that he was Second World's most pathetic noob? What would the point be? That much was obvious to everyone already. Shoot, it must be the attorney's character trying to reach him. John? John, can you see my messages? John, please respond as soon as you get an opportunity. Jenya, what's wrong? Why aren't you responding? Did we get the wrong username? But you signed the non-disclosure agreement. They couldn't have made a mistake. Please answer. Jenya! It appeared that they had been trying to contact him all along, but he hadn't noticed the active private message window. And no wonder, being utterly unfamiliar with the chat interface, and having been rather confused from the very beginning, in fact, he still didn't quite gather his wits about him. So how did he enter text? There is no keyboard. Mentally? The words, "I'm here," eagerly sprang up in the text entry box. Then he tried to give the text a mental command to slide down into the open chat window. The text complied. The answer came almost instantly. "Jenya, I was beginning to get worried. Why didn't you say anything?" "John? Who else calls you that? First, they addressed me as your namesake. It wasn't me. Do you take turns with the same character?" "Yup." "How is that even possible?" "It is without immersion, but we don't play the game. This account is used for communicating with our Second World clients. We just have a laptop on the desk, and the game runs in a limited functionality mode. Basically, the chat window is all there is. but it's not like we need anything else. The account owner is sitting right next to me, connected with his bracelet. If he takes it off, the contact with the character will be lost. This isn't very convenient. The wire from the bracelet is pretty short, and there are lots of glitches. They've really been getting on our nerves lately. The versions must conflict, regardless of what the developers are saying. But we can communicate, at any rate. Only the account owner would be able to log on with a helmet or a capsule, so we're not in a hurry to switch. How are you doing? I'm shocked. Surprised? That's putting it mildly. It's totally dreamlike, but everything looks absolutely real. What did I tell you? Some people say Second World is more real than ours. You're not regretting it yet, are you? I'm not, and I don't think I will. This is much better than euthanasia. So there, you shouldn't have doubted me. What's your location? Don't you know? How would we? The company office gave us your username as agreed, but they didn't divulge any further information. It's obviously a big city, since the chat is working. Arben, in the Rallia province. Just a second. Got it. Our sector, which is unsurprising, considering where you're logged in from. Your sector? USA, Canada. Nearly everyone here is from North America. Don't tell me I'm the only Russian here. The Russian sector is a long journey from where you are. Would you like to move there? You know I'm only interested in money. I happen to be in real need of it, as you can probably gather. I can. All for the better, then. We have no substantial links to the Russian sector. Our guys are working on your contract right now. If everything turns out fine, you'll sign it for a month initially, and I think they'll extend it since you're a good worker. I have no idea what kind of worker I can be here. It's hard to wrap my mind around it. Let's blame shock, but I advise that you pull yourself together and be quick about it. You may already have to sign the contract tomorrow. Will you be able to get through a day? I have some food and some clothes. Will that be enough? Duffett, the character I'm using to message you, hardly has any more possessions, and he's been here for a couple of months. However, he just stays put all the time, and it appears that the lack of physical exercise didn't harm his health much, which means you can stay put too. Thanks for your advice. Jenya, I need to pass the control of the character on. We need to talk to one of the players. Send us a private message if there's anything urgent. We have a notification app that monitors private messages, and it notifies us whenever there's anything incoming, so it won't take us long to get back to you. Got it. Thanks again. Spend a whole day doing nothing? No way. Even a minute would be too much for Ross. After all, there was so much around him that remained unknown. Chapter 4. Ross kept wandering around for about an hour, but he was still far from having seen every street. The city may not have been one of the bigger ones, but it was still one big labyrinth of great complexity. It made sense to place the stone walls on the perimeter. The enemy might be able to scale them and rush in for the last attack, only to get hopelessly lost. He managed to see the city gate, too. It was wide open, the heavy iron portcullis was raised, two guards in unprepossessing armor with spears in their hands stood leaning against the walls, and an emaciated-looking guy with sad eyes was sitting on a tall stool. He didn't wear any obvious weapons or armor, but his garb was incredibly elaborate, like some wild hybrid of a cape and a doublet, gaudy salmon-pink tights, and a tall black hat of the sort normally associated with witches. Ross risked venturing out for a moment. The trio paid him no attention whatsoever. There was nothing of interest outside. A few peasant houses and fields of crops of some sort in the distance, and a dark curtain at the edge of the woods behind them. A river lay to the left, with a canal dug to provide water for the moat around the city, all covered in water lilies. It was pretty odd. Ross heard that motes of this sort usually stank to high heavens, acting as part of the city's sewage system. But here there were flowers, croaking frogs, and a conspicuous absence of stench. He spent a minute standing there, then headed back toward the bureau. He didn't see any large crowds anywhere else, so it was probably the most interesting place. He could hang around the players, keeping his ears open. He just might hear something useful. He kept seeing NPCs moving past him. He still had no idea who they were and what their role was in this world. It was really easy to tell them from the players, even if you didn't look at the names. Theirs could consist of one part or two, but without such idiotic combinations as Amba Parkamel du Fumubanast. Players were always running, or at the very least, walking at a brisk pace, huffing and puffing as they went. Some even moved in awkward leaps, like mischievous children. Some wore armor, chainmails, cuirasses, and helmets, as well as swords, axes, and clubs on their belts or behind their backs. NPCs moved at a much more dignified speed, like normal people in the world familiar to Ross. Their clothes looked a lot better, too. He tried running, just like his fellow players a few times, but he didn't last long. The vigor bar started shrinking proportionally to the speed. Once it became completely empty, Ross felt like falling down and doing absolutely nothing for an hour or two. Barely managing to drag his feet, he had to stop and wait for 5 to 10 minutes for the vigor bar to be replenished at least by a quarter before he could move on. After his second attempt at a sprint, he stopped at a small square that he had somehow missed during his first walk through the city. He saw something resembling a message board next to the facade of a stone building that looked official. He hadn't seen any taller buildings yet. Miraculously, there was a newspaper hanging on it. He couldn't help but come closer. Rallian Herald. Now that was interesting. So they published in-game magazines as well? And was there anything of interest reported in the Rallian Herald? Tomorrow, on the 5th of Lactius, there will be a grand party on the First Duke's Square. The whole magnificent trio will be performing, Javanka Storm, Glamour Kitten 22, and Darina ABI. There will be fireworks, gladiator cake fights, cakes provided by the finest bakers, a fountain of alcohol, and some artistic striptease. None will regret visiting it. The rest will have to content themselves with watching the broadcast. Landscape designer needed urgently for a well-paid job at a clan castle. Requirements: good sense, level 50+, 3+ creation, 4+ aesthetics, 3+ construction and fortification. Gardener skills and whole trees of associated stats a bonus. Contact Teiko Akiribani or Malathantok Theumidristus. Ross may have failed to understand every single detail, but it wasn't too hard to conjecture that he was looking at advertisements. From the point of view of a regular person, they were nothing but useless noise that was only worthy of your attention when actively looking for something specific. However, advertisements could tell a shrewd person a lot of what would otherwise never be mentioned in more serious publications. Unfortunately, that would also require precise understanding of the nature of such advertisements, and this was something Ross sorely lacked. He saw a flicker of motion in the corner of his eye, which testified to the arrival of a player. The figure that appeared was uncommon for these parts. It was neither a dwarf nor an orc with a work account, but a true blue, pointy-eared elf. He was tall and slim, wearing a green doublet and a matching beret worn aslant, with a long and narrow sword on his belt. His head kept turning this way and that. The elf must have seen something on the other side of the square, since he shouted in a reedy voice, "Duel!" He wasn't shouting at nothing. He was addressing another player, who also wasn't one of the faceless workers, strangely enough. This one looked like a normal human being, a male aged around 20, athletic, with a well-groomed face of a model. Even though he looked to be in perfect health, he leaned on his staff as he walked, light-colored and decorated with all sorts of vignettes, with something resembling pieces of glass glittering in between. He had no armor or weapons, but Ross somehow didn't doubt that the guy could take care of himself.
"Look at that! Free entertainment!" said an indescribable gurgling voice behind him. A level 46 light elf saw a level 38 human and decided to use him to show off his toughness.
"The elf has 8 levels on the human, so he is tougher indeed," said a dwarf that was jogging by.
"Sure, but not this elf. Look at his stuff. He has a rapier, used for battle incantation, a buffer bard, in other words, the kind deployed on raids. Do you see his raid anywhere? I don't. And what's a buffer to a mage? A cockroach under his boot."
"So this man is a mage?"
"Yep. Judging by the runes on his clothes, he's your run-of-the-mill elemental mage, or something similar."
"But is it allowed to battle inside cities?"
"Duels are allowed in squares. The fighters are covered by a dome that stops arrows and blocks magic projectiles. If they damage the cobblestones, the guards will come, and the brawlers will have to pay a pretty penny. Otherwise, you're free to do as you please, unless it's after dusk. Citizens are not to be disturbed during their rest."
The elf gave an ostentatious bow, sweeping the cobblestones with his beret, and took out his long and thin sword, or rapier, as the anonymous interlocutor called it. And he didn't merely take it out. He attacked at once. The mage raised his staff above his head, wrapping his body in a ghostly, shimmering cocoon.
"The sphere of absorption, a shield that absorbs damage. The higher the mage's intellect, the more damage it can take before it's exhausted. So, what does our elf do?" Well, as they say, there are 3 types of noobs: regular noobs, ridiculous noobs, and buffers who forget to buff themselves before battle. Pointy Ears is about to have a great deal of damage done to his confidence. Here it comes."
The mage lowered his staff in a sudden motion. Its tip produced a fireball that hit the elf in the chest and engulfed his entire body. The doublet started burning. The pointy-eared player screamed, or rather tried to sing something, which looked rather weird given the situation, but the same staff then produced something like an enormous icicle that hit the opponent right in the head.
"That's it. There won't be any singing."
Ross took a sideways look at the zone chat. "Fly Capib has defeated Rigolus Alitrul in a duel." The flames disappeared without a trace. The elf stood alive and unharmed, although his face showed a great deal more concern now, and a few soot stains remained on his doublet.
"Some big banana must have convinced the boy to level up his support character, promising lots of fat loots. The boy didn't read the guides, or didn't pay enough attention reading them, and he got into the habit of trusting the big banana. He dreamed of glory and heroic deeds, and ended up as an amplifier and a first aid kit for other heroes. He cannot handle this deplorable situation and challenges everyone to a duel, but even complete noobs wipe the floor with him. I sometimes pity these fools. On the other hand, people need them. What are heroes going to do if the buffers and the healers become a scarcity?"
Ross finally turned around, seeing his interlocutor for the first time. His height and build were similar to those of a dwarf, and he had a beard as well, but that was where the similarities ended. The beard looked like that of a goat, and was forked to boot. The head resembled a pear turned upside down, with oversized eyes and ears like chewed-up pies. Rare tufts of greasy hair didn't make him any more endearing. The stranger was wearing nothing but knee-long blue boxers with white polka dots. He had no shoes, and it was easy to see that he had short and cracked claws instead of toenails. "Are you an NPC?" asked Ross hesitatingly.
Why would you think that?
You don't have a name at all.
Do you even know what NPCs are?
I'm not entirely sure. Unusual players of some sort?
Not quite. They exist to provide background for the game. You've read Alice in Wonderland, haven't you?
Sure.
Well, there was only one player in Wonderland, Alice. The rest of them, the White Rabbit and so on, were NPCs. Do you get it now?
More or less. NPCs are controlled by software rather than players, right?
That's it.
So players have names, and you don't. All I see are digits.
They aren't just digits. They're my name.
You used digits for your character's name?
It wasn't me, actually. It's a long story, and a sad one, too.
I'm not in any hurry, actually.
I have nowhere to hurry either. How about not hurrying anywhere together?
I'm all for it. So, who are you?
I'm one of this world's dinosaurs.
Is that a race?
You don't have to be so literal. I'm one of those poor beta testers whose accounts have never been shut down as obsolete. They probably never will shut them down now.
A beta tester? You took part in testing Second World? In the process of creation?
I did indeed.
Ross decided that he had to befriend this person by all means. He must be a treasure trove of necessary information.
Look, what do I call you? I get it. The name's hard to pronounce. Call me Digits. Everyone calls me that here.
The ugly dude's lips suddenly stretched in a pleasant smile that even the pickiest of aesthetes would hardly find any fault with.
You appear to be a newcomer, Ross.
Call a spade already. I'm a noob. I heard this word about 100 times today.
Only 100? Oh, year. It's Wednesday, IRL. 2 more days until the Friday stampede. A standard work account, according to the squiggle.
Squiggle?
The symbol, next to your ever-so-original username.
I didn't choose it.
I didn't choose mine, either.
Look, Digits, I'm not just a noob. I'm a complete ignoramus. This is my first time in a game of this sort.
With deep immersion?
Not just that. The last time I saw a game was around 5 years ago. I was really into flight simulators, but there was no immersion there.
That fad didn't pass me by either. Although, I don't think I missed any games. I remember games no one else probably has any recollection of anymore. I'm a dinosaur here, and I'm not any better IRL.
I ended up here unexpectedly, and I know nothing at all. I just wander around with my eyes open wide without understanding anything. You're the first person I'm having a normal conversation with.
Right. Sounds familiar. Everyone's in a hurry, and you can't find anyone to talk to. You should be in a hurry, too, by the way. A work account implies that you do work.
My contract is only coming in tomorrow. At least, I hope so.
Do you at least have any money or food?
I have 2 novices' rations.
Oh? I didn't know they still had them.
I'd share, but I cannot give them to other players.
Thanks. I'll manage.
I wasn't just saying that. I actually wanted to ask you a few questions.
Well, ask away. I don't charge for conversation. Only, we shouldn't just be standing here. Let's get moving.
Where to?
You already have food, but I have to find mine before nightfall.
Digits turned around and started toward one of the streets leading to the square, carrying on as he walked.
I don't want to stick my nose into other people's business, but I'm just curious. Why did you decide you'd be offered a contract tomorrow?
My attorney said he would help.
You have an attorney? You must be a big banana, too.
It's not like that, really. Still, he promised me a plush contract for a month.
You trust this attorney, don't you?
Almost as much as I trust myself.
That's unwise. You shouldn't trust anyone. Including me. How would you even take advantage of me? I can't even pass my food to other players. Someone could damage your bag until it loses all its durability. It will fall apart, and the rations will fall out. And how would you do that? I can't be attacked, after all. I wouldn't. I'm level zero, just like you. Worse than you, in fact. A higher-level player, though, could bring a train of low-level mobs and dump them onto you. A train? You mean you've never played anything of this sort before? Never. You know, I actually envy you a little, doing everything for the first time, with the whole world to explore. Anyway, I digress. Imagine a young wolf. A social mob around level 9 to 12. A level 30 player can kill one of those in 2 or 3 strikes, even with a crappy weapon, possibly without losing a single hit point. Young wolves don't normally attack first, although you can draw the pack's aggro in most cases. They're much bolder when there are many of them. Now imagine a level 30 warrior with a proper invisibility skill. Invisibility skill? It's a specific battle technique. Comes in handy in any fight. You slip into the darkness, then move sideways and attack from an unexpected direction. Invisibility is lost the second you attack, but the fighters who have this skill tend to be nasty opponents. But let's get back to our wolves. A warrior like that can draw a mob's aggro, provoke it, as it were. For instance, he can hack at the wolf with a sword once, dealing some damage without killing it. I get it. The entire pack will attack the aggressor, and the warrior splits as fast as he can, sparing no vigor points. He runs over to your location with a bunch of mobs following him, his personal train. Then he becomes invisible, and you suddenly find yourself up against a wolf pack all alone. All the mobs are enraged as hell, and all they want is someone to unleash their rage upon. And look at you, a standard level zero work character with the first virtual level and no combat abilities, not even a weapon to defend yourself with. So the train is now yours, and you're a slow runner to boot. Need I go on? I get it. There are ways of killing the likes of me. Indeed, and more than one. A high-level mage with skills doing mass damage can take out a crowd of players like you, but don't let it bother you. The chance that you'll drop something is zero, and you'd need to face a few dozen packs of mobs to have a cheap bag destroyed. They don't damage bags much. Clothes get ripped apart a lot, though. Is that why you're wearing nothing but your boxers? Say what? No, my clothes just got worn through all by themselves. I'm a dinosaur, remember? But the boxers mend themselves every new game day. They're novices' indestructible underpants, after all. An epic item of sorts. When durability reaches zero, clothes disappear? They disintegrate into near-useless rags. Yours would be completely useless. So what do you need to do to keep it in a good condition? How do you keep your clothes in a good condition IRL? It's the same here. And why didn't that elf die at the end of the duel? Well, it was a duel. He had a single hit point remaining out of the 300 or 400 he'd had initially. This is why he's still alive. Had this happened in battle, he'd have gotten a free teleport to his designated respawn point. What do you normally do, besides watching players fight? Duels are rare here. It's a minor city, so you mostly get workers. Players with expanded accounts, even low-level ones, only end up here by accident, or to do some quest. Not many of those. There aren't many mobs in the area, and even fewer quests of any value. We are at the very edge of explored world, and there doesn't appear to be anything of interest beyond here. A boring corner of a boring province, the domain of miners and lumberjacks. Do you have a work account as well? Nope. It's a stretch to even call it an account. But you can only have a single player per account. And not just per account, but in general. Who's going to check if you have another one? You use your actual personal data to register. You could take somebody else's character, but who'd give you one and be left with nothing? Also, the system will instantly identify you as a different person once you try to log on, so you won't be able to. They had a good reason to make the medical exam mandatory before registration. Only noobs believe they can register a single account for the whole family and take turns logging on with full immersion. The attorneys at my company use the same character. Well, that's in 2D.